it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. Josh is otherwise engaged, but we are joined by two wonderful regulars. Jeff Arsenal. Hi, Jeff.
How the devil are you, Boyd?
I am splendid, thank you very much.
I bet.
You're resplendent in your Andy Warhol Marilyn Monroe t-shirt.
Yeah.
The listeners can't see, but I can. And we're joined by Rick Lawrence. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Boyd. How are you?
Good. And you're resplendent in the Chevron Fest shirt. The banana, burnt banana, was it? Was it burnt?
Bruised banana.
How could I get that? How embarrassing. In celebration, obviously, of our triumph.
Yeah, it was on the floor, actually. I think I had it on the other day, and it was on my bedroom floor. And on my walk to work this morning, I bumped into my neighbour, who was also at the game yesterday, and obviously wound down his window and said, oh, you know, obviously wearing the shirt, had to wear the shirt today. And I was like, yeah, well, do you know what? It felt like, you know, when you used to wear colours on the way to a cup final or something, you'd sometimes get like people honking their horns. And it was like that. It was like, oh, someone's wearing an Arsenal shirt after yesterday. They're obviously in a good mood and sort of showing off. So it did feel a bit like that. It wasn't the intention, but obviously very happy to get some comments, especially after the victory.
Yeah, I was wearing the black and gold away shirt yesterday. And on my way back, Man U guy kind of like motioned me over. I thought he was going to, hit me or something. Because he was wearing some Man U top. And he went, no, you deserve that, mate. You deserve that. And I thought, oh, that's a rare moment of humility from a Man United. Certainly wasn't reflected in his manager, Ten Hag. Let's start there. In fact, I was thinking where to start. Why don't we start with the fact that Erik ten Hag, this alleged tactical genius, you know, he's done pretty well with Man United, kind of. But he had this whole theory, Rick, that had a litany of refereeing decisions that went against them. Now, all I would say is, I mean, if that's true, then he's ignoring one of the most incredible refereeing decisions of the whole game, possibly the most incredible refereeing decision of the whole game, which was to reverse the penalty for us that never ever happens in the VAR world. What do you think?
You want me to go for all the decisions in one, or
yeah, all the Ten Hag allegations?
So obviously, he didn't. You know, why would he? But he didn't mention the fact that we had a penalty overturned. And as you do in your Arsenal WhatsApp groups, there's been quite a lot of chat. And actually, it was last night after watching the game back, I asked my friends if they thought it was a penalty, and there was no one said it was definitely a penalty, but also others, a lot of people thought that it shouldn't have been overturned. And I'm somewhere in between happy to overturn it because I don't think it was a penalty. And I think I get the argument to say that it shouldn't have been overturned because, you know, the whole thing about re-refereeing the game and was it clear and obvious error? I have no problem with it being overturned because I don't think it was a penalty. And I think if you're going to use VAR, which I wish they didn't, if you're going to use it, you might as well get to the right decision. But I do hear the argument to say you can't just start overturning every decision, whether it's, you know, when it's so debatable. But I have no problem overall in that one. I think the decision on Højlund, I think it's pronounced Højlund, no, that's not a penalty for me. I think it was more of a penalty, I think, than our one, but I don't think it was a penalty. The offside, no point debating. Like, you know, they've got lines and all that, so you just have to accept it. You might be frustrated, but if their lines say it was offside, it was offside. And the one that really is just like clutching at straws is the goal. Our second goal, Rice's goal. What on earth he thinks? Like, if you're going to give free kick, I mean, if anything, it's just as much a penalty as it is a free kick. Right.
It's a penalty,
If you lose all credibility in your argument if you're going to include that in your whinging. Like, if he thinks it's a penalty on Højlund, then, like, you know, come out. If you want to say it, it's boring, but don't moan about decisions, it's boring. But if you're going to say that, that's one thing. But to say that Johnny Evans was fouled is just mad. I actually said, if you want to see desperation for a penalty, look at Gabriel's reaction, because Gabriel's appealing for a penalty as Rice shoots, which is quite hilarious, but not the first time an Arsenal player has begged for a penalty late on as we push for a late winner. But mad to think that was a foul. Absolutely mad. I don't know what he's thinking. They're just bitter, just complete and utter sour grapes.
Total sour grapes. Jeff, I mean, I would normally be slightly reluctant to start with refereeing decisions, but I think it's so funny and entertaining, actually, that you know, what Ten Hag decided. And if you saw it, I watched it on, obviously I went to the game, but then I watched it back on Sky, the whole thing from beginning to end. Yeah. And he's interviewed on the pitch with, you know, their pundits, Theo Walcott was there. Yeah, did you see it, Roy Keane? Yeah. And I thought that they're all like dumbstruck. He read out this litany. It was really funny, wasn't it? It's just funny.
I think he's just a desperate manager, reeling out all the stuff, making excuses for a team that they set up like Newcastle did against us last year. They come there, and to be honest with you, it gives us a little bit of credit that, you know, how far we've come. Where a big side comes like Manchester United with all the power and the money that they've spent over the summer again, or the last 5 years, come to, they more or less say, okay, well, we can't really beat you man for man technically on the pitch. We're going to have to just go long, like they've done in the last two or three games against us. And they've had quite a lot of success, apart from the place last year at our place. They've had a lot of success with that long ball. And that's the only thing they could do to get round it. But, I mean, I think they was poor. I think they set up poor. To go back to the penalty, I think it was a penalty. I really do. I think 9 times out of 10, it would be given a penalty and no one would even challenge it. So why VAR are getting involved? It just wasn't a clear and obvious error, because there was a connection there. And I can see what you're saying, Rick. If you slow it down and you look at it, I think that the first time, that's a blatant penalty. But when I looked at it, it was slowed down. Oh, he looks like he's just hung his leg out a little bit there. But I do think it was a penalty. But we had it ripped away from us. It kind of like the Eze one at Crystal Palace last week. If that was given a penalty, I would have said, you know what, I think it was a penalty. You know, it was maybe a penalty. And I want to probably complain. It was a harsh one. They're both quite harsh.
I think a threshold needs to be quite high to
this is
for me. And I think, SA1 is quite similar to that. I just don't think their penalties, like, I don't think there's enough in it.
The problem is, Rick, it's the consistency.
No.
You know, if that's not a penalty, that's cool. No problem.
But it's Gary Neville's point, which is that first of all, I think someone said today on the radio, they still can't work out whether it's a penalty or not. It's definitely, it's like 50-50 for me. And the fact that you've got two players, Gary Neville pointed out that you have two of their players who kind of bundled into him to try to get the ball, but they definitely, at least one of them made contact, at least one of them, if not both, made contact.
And there was nowhere near the ball, Boyd.
No, they weren't. No, they weren't. I mean, I think it's.
If you make a challenge,
I know.
In the penalty area, you're giving the referee a decision to make.
Right. But here's the thing. Here's my point, and the Gary Neville point, which I think is pertinent. It's you never, ever, ever see them re-referee the decision ever to that extent. It's always it was not clear and obvious. And I don't know who was the referee expert on Sky. What's his name? That twat.
Mike Dean. Yeah.
Mike Dean. Oh. I mean, I have issues about him anyway. Obviously, he basically admitted that he took a VAR decision a couple of weeks ago because of his mate. And for him, they have to ask him about that. Anyway, they didn't, as far as I'm aware. Anyway, he started off by saying, "Oh yeah, it's a penalty," because he wanted to agree with the decision that was given on the pitch. Then he changed his mind in about 10 seconds. And by the end of it, he was going, "Yeah, I mean, we've come to the right decision." Gary Neville kept pointing out up until when he right at the end of the coverage, when they're all there standing there together, saying, "But they're not supposed to re-referee these decisions. They say there's a high margin in which they intervene," and that was not clear and obvious. It was the absolute opposite of clear and obvious, to the point where everyone's debating it. So the referee makes the decision on the pitch, and then they get him to change it. It was really, that is insanely unusual. That so my issue is, maybe they got it right in the end, who knows, but it's still debatable. But the fact that it's so debatable meant that it was ridiculous that they changed that they asked him to go to the camera thing and watch it, the screen and watch
it. As soon as he goes over to the camera, it's weighed in. You know he's just going to change I would love to see a referee at some stage. I can't remember a referee going over there and blanking him, saying, "No, it's a penalty."
There has been one or two.
Yeah, it's been a couple.
Has there?
Yeah.
I think
there's one at the Women's World Cup.
I saw that one. Tell me, that's true.
Yeah, but there's been one or two in the Premier League as well. Gomrick.
I think if it was given against us, we'd think it was harsh. And I think that I haven't heard anyone. I know Jeff, you just said you do think it was a penalty. So come down from this argument a little bit, but I don't think anyone thinks it was definitely a penalty. So I definitely hear the argument to say don't overturn it unless it's clear and obvious. But I think unless you really think it's a penalty and they're going to use VAR, then I don't see the issue with them saying actually just not a penalty, regardless of whether it's clear and obvious or not. But I do hear that argument.
The argument is it's a change in their... always say we're not there to re-refer. In fact, Sky had a feature with the PGMOL, and he reiterated that point. He said, we're not going to re-referee decisions. On the on-pitch decision, to overturn an on-pitch decision, you have to reach quite a high bar. He specifically made that point. And for me, they've literally completely gone against that. They've just completely changed their mind. And if they've changed their mind publicly, and if this is the case from now on, they are going to re-referee decisions happily, then fine. But as you say, to use the dreaded C word, the consistency is just completely been...
See, my thing is, that we all agree there was definitely some kind of contact, yeah?
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
Havertz
was going towards the goal and the other two was facing the other way. They didn't make any contact with the football. There's a contact...
The other thing is, I had a really good... it was right in front of us when me and Josh were seeing on club level. And I said to him, I just don't see why he'd go down if there wasn't enough, because he was clear on... He was like about to score. I mean, even Kai Havertz could...
Well, that's actually an interesting point, boy, because this sounds incredibly harsh. I'm not meaning to be. I'm not trying to jump on the Havertz bandwagon. But I don't think every player would go down there. And I think maybe it's to do with his confidence. Maybe I'm looking too much into this, but his confidence is low. He takes the chance. Right. Here you go. I'm going down to win a penalty for Arsenal. Okay. You know, it's gives me a bit of my credit in the bank. Whereas maybe a player who's on form or a player that's a bit more confident just goes bursting past those players and shoots or lays it off.
North Bank.
Yeah. I think it was just quite an easy, go down here. If I win a penalty, I'm a hero. Yeah. And if I don't, then everyone's just going to shout at the referee anyway. So he kind of did both in the end for a little bit. I think it was not trying to move away necessarily from the penalty in general, but I think it was a really good game. Like there was so many things that I said.
Incredible. Yeah.
I think the referee struggled from almost the beginning. The strangest one, and I haven't seen a replay of it, was the Saka yellow card. I saw at half time some people getting on there looking at their phones on Twitter and saying that he could have been sent off or some finding some Man U accounts. But he gave a foul to say that Saka was fouled and then said that Saka went in dangerously. But if you're being fouled, unless you're punching someone, and you're not off balance, if you're off balance, how do you end up? I know it's not important, but how do you end up getting a yellow card for fouling someone whilst being fouled? It just was bizarre. I don't think anyone in the stadium knew why he'd been booked. And there was just a lot of stuff like warning players for time wasting, but not booking them. And then he started booking them. And I think the referee struggled in general. And
I agree. I think that second point is a really good one. It was bewildering. Yeah, absolutely bewildering. And also he kept giving, he kept doing that. There were loads of fouls, I thought, on both sides actually, which would look like, and he let them go. He was obsessed with letting everything go. And then he completely changed that halfway through the first half and then suddenly penalized everyone. I think he's terrible, that referee. And he was particularly bad on Saturday. I know it's like, I thought it was interesting, actually, on Match of the Day 2, they seemed to deliberately avoid analysing the referee mistakes, almost like someone had, you know, taken the high stand. But it is, as you say, it had everything, the game.
Yeah, so, I'm quite pleased that they avoid that. I get bored watching them, unless it's, you know, something that's really worth talking about. But I'd much rather watch them dissect, like, elements of the actual game. Like, I thought the game changed quite a lot when that Højlund came on, because suddenly Man U, I've never seen a play before, and I was really impressed with, because suddenly Man U had a player that he was backing into Gabriel, and really, I don't think Gabriel had a clue what was going on, because he'd basically played it, you know, played against Martial that didn't get near him for however many minutes, and suddenly had this guy that was almost bullying him. And I think it took Gabriel by surprise, and he took a while to adapt, but Højlund turned him a couple of times and he looked like a handful, and the game sort of turned a bit, because I think we suddenly thought, oh god, you know, they've got a bit about them again. And Rashford's very dangerous on that left hand side, and I think everyone, I felt like there was a bit of a, is a draw such a bad result here, because, you know, they threatened a little bit, and then obviously once they scored and it got disallowed, it was suddenly like, oh, we can go on and win, and obviously we did. And it was one of the most enjoyable games I've been to. It was amazing.
My blood pressure, mate, it was through the roof. Honestly, it was. I was sitting there watching the game at the match, and it was like, it was so. I was so frustrated, and I was getting so wound up because I just thought they were going to break away and score, you know, and rob us. I think we was the way the better team. We was always looking to win the game.
You're right. Yeah, there was a period their disallowed goal, the offside, the millimeter offside. I do think I'm not analysing the referee decisions, because Rick's right. It's much better to. I make no apologies about mentioning the referee, because they're just uppermost in my mind. But they all contributed to the incredible level of excitement of the game. If it hadn't been for those incidents and their offside, which was millimeters and was and you know, it does feel infuriating. If that had been in our position, it'd be like, morally, you feel like the moral high ground as you scored that goal. And in the old days, it would have been level. Definitely would have been level, wouldn't it? But to have that disallowed was so joyous. It gave us so much hope. And it was so kind. It was such a kind of fundamental moment that I was like, that was the first moment of kind of great happiness and relief and luck. I think we were very lucky. You know, I mean, Gabriel was kind of leaning, wasn't he, back and forth. He was trying to keep himself on side, keep the player offside. But that gave us a huge amount of belief. And then for those then two subsequent goals to go in as they did, and for it to be Declan Rice that scored the goal, the key goal, and even then, and then Jesus to score the second goal, the perfect players who needed goals, and I think, you know, underlining their cult status.
Kai Havertz, obviously.
By Kai Havertz, I know. Yeah, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but the whole thing was like extended fairy tale with like multiple endings.
It was, and I actually, sorry to cut you off that point. There was, I thought we might have missed our chance to win the game when Saka hit it straight at the
chance,
and it was a really nice pass by Ben White. I don't know if Jesus was leaving it on purpose or not. I need to see that one more time. But,
well, I think Saka thought he might have been, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Part of the excuse as to why he didn't really.
Yeah, and I think, properly. Only when he hit that, I was like, because of all, I reckon if I could choose one player in our squad that would fall to, it just came so nicely to him. And he just passed it straight to the keeper, and it was like, we might.
If he kicks it anywhere else, it's a goal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So close to the keeper.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
As people have said, he didn't have his best game, Saka. But But he's still like head and shoulders above pretty much every other. You know, Saka not on great form, underlined by that miss, which normally 99 times out of 100 you'd say he'd score. He still contributed massively. He had an assist and, you know, like lots of goal scoring opportunities he created as well during the match. So even when he's not his best, he's still fantastic. And I think, you know, people, I don't, I don't think he's gone. He's just, you know, quite like everyone. He's a bit knackered, and he works relentlessly hard. And he had one of his slightly less effective games, but he's still incredibly effective.
I think it was one of Man United's tactics, though. You know,
yeah.
You see, Dalot was Dalot was more or less an attacker.
Yeah.
When as soon as they got the ball, he was flying down, and I think he was told, "Listen, we want Saka to do his work in defence rather than we have to defend against him." So if he's up there, he's out of the way. He's out of the problem, and that's why they kept on looking for that long ball to Rashford, and Dalot was just making Saka go and mark him. You know. So he done most of the work last night defending. I think that's what it was.
I think I agree that Saka had a quiet game. Actually, I think he almost went about 10 minutes without touching the ball from when the game first started, it felt like. But I still think Saka's underrated. I think the guy is just, he's just unbelievable. I don't think people that don't support Arsenal realise just how good he is, because there isn't really anything he can't do. Funnily enough, I was showing... my 5-year-old daughter, I was just showing her all of Saka's goals on YouTube the other day, and it's amazing when
she was falling asleep.
Curse.
But you,
no, she was. She's.
Were you giving her a lecture on Saka's goals guide?
It's quite clear if she wants to stay up a bit later, or she just wants to get my good book, she'll ask me to watch football or Arsenal.
Oh,
I'm a sucker. I'm happy to indulge it. So I was showing her the goals, and I had sort of one eye on it because I was working at the time. I said, just watch this, and my daddy just needs to do something. It's amazing when you see his early goals, because a lot of them were when he was playing either on the left or a little bit through the middle, or sort of behind a striker. And even on his right foot, he never, you know, other than when we were 1-0 up against Palace and he went to left back for a bit, he never touches the other side of the pitch. But his right foot is brilliant. He's definitely scored at least one header for us. The guy is unbelievable. And yes, they didn't have his best game, but I thought towards the end of the game, I was thinking I'd really like to see Trossard out there just to try and change something. But I thought Martinelli was playing well, and I thought it was a bit harsh to bring him off. But you can't take Saka off.
No.
He's untouchable. Yeah. And obviously, in the end, I don't think Reece Nelson had contributed towards us winning, but...
He played one key pass, I think.
He played pass for the third goal.
Yeah, for the third goal.
He actually has an important tackle, sort of tackle stroke pass with Rashford.
But that felt very symbolic, that substitution, didn't it? That was like, I'm going to have ram the nail further into Man United by bringing on one of their nemesis is Reece Nelson.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, I'm a big fan of Trossard, and I did want to see him out there. But I guess Arteta just thought maybe he wanted to just go like for like with Martinelli off and Reece Nelson on. But yes, I think Saka is just so good, but he can't play. He can't play 8 or 9 out of 10 every single week, because no one can.
Funny enough, on about 70 minutes, I was asking for to Trossard to come on in replace of Havertz.
Yeah.
A little bit more movement, hold the ball up a little bit better, you know.
But Vieira, isn't he? Vieira did really well in the previous game when he came on. And I think Vieira deserved that chance, didn't he? And did really well. I mean, fantastic pass, you know. So I actually thought Arteta's decision making in terms of, well, everything really kind of worked pretty well. And I want to ask about that. I want to go back to the beginning because, let's take a quick break first and then we'll talk about the start of this game and the team selection, etc. Here's a quick break.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back from the break. Yeah, I do wanted to mention, because we'll never know the answer to this, but I think it is interesting to ponder, isn't it, whether Arteta would have stuck with, it hadn't been for, you know, the injury to Partey, whether he would have stuck with Partey on the right and this defensive system that has, let's face it, been controversial to say the least, and surprising. Whereas the Partey injury allowed him, so to speak, to pick, I think, that probably the team that everyone would have thought would have been picked from the very first game this season, you know, like basically keeping our structure from last season, but with a couple of better or new players, particularly Rice in midfield and Havertz, you know, in the Xhaka role. People have gone, oh yeah, that's what we expected to happen this season. And because it didn't, I think it's interesting to ponder whether or not he would have gone, played that, stuck with what he was doing, Jeff, or would he, do you think this was, would he would have played this system and roughly this team anyway?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's tried and tested, and you know, you're playing against the you know, the better teams or the bigger teams. I don't think you can't really take chances, can you? I mean, I was dreading it until I heard the news about Partey. I was thinking, oh my God, he's at right back. Marcus Rashford is left wing, plays on the left there. It's not a good match. It's just not a good match. We're going to be all over the place. So that's what I was really, really about. So, you know, personally, I think it was a blessing in disguise. But to answer your question, I do think that he would have changed it back again to the old tried and tested, because I think we're much more comfortable. I mean, I don't know, Gabriel, he's so strong, and I just think he's a good defender, and he's you know, he gets very emotional about stuff, and he's one of the leaders of the pack, although he's not a captain. You know, he's there, and he's one that will stand up for you. If there's a bit of aggravation, he'll get involved. He's not one to you know, walk out of it. He'll get involved, and he just holds everything together. And I do think we are a better team with Gabriel playing in the team. Mm. So I think he would pick that against a team like Man United anyway.
Yeah, Rick. I mean, I guess we'll never know what's in his mind. But he had that rather kind of brilliant / funny press conference speech where he talked about how comparing his team selection tactical approach to his different routes to the Arsenal training ground, which was lovely. He had two big analogies, didn't he, in his press statements this week. One was the routes to the training ground one, which was great. And everyone picked up on that and said, you know, what route would you have gone through this weekend? And there was also the one after the match, where he talked about the Kai Havertz, where he referred the Kai Havertz situation to how he conquered, he used the word conquered, his wife. And he thought the relationship between him and his wife mirrored the relationship, I guess, between the fans and Havertz.
Very funny.
Yeah, I think conquered maybe a bit of talking in his second language there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that I do think he would have gone to this back four that did start the game, regardless of Partey's injury.
Hmm.
I think, but I would like to think he also would have played Partey and Rice in midfield, and Havertz would have had to have made way. I don't know. I don't, you know, obviously we'll never know. But I think yesterday did show that we're not necessarily right now, anyway, in a better position squad-wise than we were last season in midfield, because I just didn't see anything yesterday that made me think, oh yeah, Rice and Havertz is a really good midfield. Because Havertz just isn't there yet for us.
Hmm.
He's played four games, so, you know, very happy to give him time. The problem is, if it's not Havertz, I don't rate Vieira. Funny enough, I know he always gets a mention on this podcast, but Alan Alger, I saw a tweet that he said, you know, Vieira plays a good 10 minutes for us and suddenly he's fantastic. And I agree. I think Vieira still has a huge way to go, because I think, you know, if you weigh up all of his performances for Arsenal, I think there's probably one good one, and that was against Fulham in his little cameo compared to the poor one. So
if you weigh him up, if you pardon the pun, you get he's still so slight and skinny, isn't he? Which I'm not nothing,
no, he is.
But it just seems a very unimposing figure. So I agree with that. Yeah.
No, I think I think it's a problem position for us still, despite spending 100 million on someone, because we lost Xhaka. We spent 65 million on another player who the jury's still out, but that's fair enough. He's played four games and he's playing in a position that isn't his natural position, we all think. But yeah, I think Rice and Partey would be a fantastic midfield for us, but I don't know when we'll see it, because Partey seems like it's going to be out for a while. And I think that second position is up for grabs. I would say in the pecking order, you've probably got Havertz, then probably Vieira, and then it'd be interesting to see what he would do if, you know, he needs to play someone else there. because I think Smith Rowe seems to be way down the pecking order. Maybe he would play Jorginho as the holding midfielder and Rice as the more attacking one. I don't know. You know, it's, we don't even necessarily see that if Havertz and Rice couldn't play. Havertz and Vieira couldn't play. But I actually agree with what Jeff was saying earlier. I was hoping that Trossard would have come on for Havertz. I thought he left Havertz on for a little bit too long yesterday. It was quite late before he made the change. I would have liked to see Trossard because I'm a big Trossard fan.
Trossard wasn't great, was he though, when he started?
He started up front, and it was 45 minutes. I think overall Trossard's been very good for us. I think that I actually think Arteta, I don't know how fit Zinchenko was, but I think we're in a bit of a not a big issue, but having one left-footed left-back in the squad, unless you include Kiwior, isn't great. Like Tomiyasu yesterday had to keep cutting back onto his right foot, and it was a little bit frustrating. He can use a left foot, but obviously it's not his natural one. And I'm not a big Tierney fan, but having let Tierney go on loan, we do seem to be in a position where it's either Zinchenko or someone who is right-footed that's going to play a left-back, assuming that would be, well, Tomiyasu really, unless he thinks Kiwior can play there. So, yeah, that wasn't the best substitution for me either. Obviously, you know, no one cares now because it paid off. I think all three of his subs weren't the best. I would have rather seen Trossard on instead of Nelson either. But like I said, obviously no one's bothered now. But yeah, I think the starting lineup didn't surprise me. And yeah, I think overall, obviously it all paid off in the end.
And you know Zinchenko, you know, guaranteed he's not going to get through 50 games.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's the problem. No, I agree, Jeff.
So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see. I think you go on.
Tomiyasu, I mean, he plays left back for Japan, doesn't he?
Yeah. The problem is the problem is the injury to Yuri and Timber, isn't it? I mean, that has robbed
even
us
he,
of...
I know it's... I mean, it seems like a strange thing to fixate on, but even he is right-footed. He's not someone that's going to cross from his left foot. It just... Yesterday, Tomiyasu, I think it was a brief moment where he got onto his left foot and cut back and passed it. And then Vieira passed it back to him. And then he passed it back to him because he just couldn't cross. But maybe it's a minute point, and, you know, who knows whether it will become apparent again. But I actually think Zinchenko had one of his aura games yesterday. And I'm a big fan of his because I think he's really important to the side. And again, you know, not everyone can play really well every week. And obviously, that was his first start of the season. So, was his first start? Did he start against Fulham? I can't remember. I don't think. No, he didn't. Did he?
No,
came on. So yeah, it's nice to have, you know, these options. I think in centre midfield, we're still not sure. I'm still uncertain as to how we're going to line up without Partey and how it's going to look. Well, I reckon it'll be Rice and Havertz, but how that's going to play out.
I mean, he admits it. I agree with you, but but Arteta basically using his analogy about the route to work, etc. Was his way of, the wife analogy yesterday about Havertz was kind of his way of saying, I'm persevering with this because to not persevere with it is worse and almost ignoring his actual level of performance. I thought it was fascinating and revealing because what he's saying really is, I need to give him the absolute every single chance there is for him to do well and for the fans to fall in love with him, even if he's actual performances aren't that great, really, isn't it? That's what he's saying. And I thought that was a kind of quite a rare mission, really, that your team selection is based as much around the psychological importance of not undermining a player and not of reducing their confidence as it is but actually how they're performing.
It's so difficult for these players that come in there. I mean, the spotlight, there's no
oh, I know,
to hide. You know, you've got 3 million cameras watching every movement you're doing and stuff like that. I just think we've got to give him time. There's been many
the year that, of course,
and I know you're not, of course, yeah. But
it was unfortunate, wasn't it? And that he gave away the ball.
It was
for that, you know. I mean, that was, and in fact, Josh, who sat next to me yesterday on club level, literally said as that happened, he said, oh, "Wouldn't it be awful for him if they now go and score?" And it was like the most unfortunate moment, and I felt sorry for him more than anything,
You know what? Talking about the goal.
Yeah.
Okay, he gave the ball away, but they still had a lot to do.
It was really on
the halfway line.
Yeah.
And the way we defended against that goal was shocking.
It was, yeah.
Marcus Rashford, right? You know, more or less what, you know, I mean, you know, if you're a defender, you need to take them away from the goal, whatever happens. And you know, Rash, he got a fantastic shot, right?
Yeah.
If he cuts inside, we had two players there, both got in front of each other. You know, there was they didn't know who was going to go and mark what, you know, what way they was going to go. Someone's got to take control of it. You've got to show him out to the corner flag. I mean, rather than sending down up the road or something, then Finsbury Park or whatever, rather than towards the goal. It was crazy. Mm.
And I think they were just.
Oh, I could see it happening. I said, do not let him go on his right.
No, I know.
We just cut inside and it was crazy. We've got to learn better. But again, about that, we play so high, right? If we play like that in Europe, we're going to struggle because the gaps behind and the space in behind is amazing. It's crazy.
But the way they were set up was so interesting, wasn't it? Interesting / boring, because I think until they scored that goal, for the first half an hour, they barely even tried to get in our half. I mean, I know we were pushing up on them, but they were like playing a low, their apparently amazing goalkeeper on the ball was just spraying it out, you know, to his own defenders, to his own fullbacks, and every now and then he might go a little bit longer. But it was unbelievably unambitious for them, that for the first half of the first half. I thought it was incredible how tedious they were. And I think that kind of inevitably means that you end up kind of falling into, maybe that was the trap they were trying to set, that they were going to score on the break. And it worked, to some extent. But I think go on.
You've got Saliba and Gabriel like halfway in the opposition half, and there's a great big gap behind you. And I think that you got two lightning players up top, which they had in who's the right winger?
Anthony.
Oh, he's rubbish.
Anthony, yeah.
He's got plenty of pace about him. And Rashford, you know, that's all they had. That is really all they had. The big, let them have the ball, let them get comfortable. They was saying, you know, let them, you know, come over the halfway line, you know, and as soon as you get it, ping it, long ball, and see what that's where they got. They got the goal against the run of play.
Completely.
Mad.
Oh, it was infuriating, because it was so against the run of play, Rick. But talking of the midfield, I mean, at least compared to our midfield, Man U's midfield is diabolical, I think, and you know they kind of avoided it as much as possible, played long balls, or you know, and I just think we looked so much superior to them in every single way. Again, to go back to, you know, their manager and their players, and even, you know, the commentator Roy Keane. I thought Roy Keane was very kind of like weirdly kind of complimenting them, saying they kind of played quite well. I don't think they played particularly well at all, apart from one or two moments, breakout moments.
I think it was very funny that he said about the Johnny Evans. Did you hear about what he said about him?
No, what did he say?
He was here. He said he was here till he was 27, which was about 7-8 years ago, and he left because he couldn't get in the team. He said, "This is Man United. Now we've brought him back."
Yeah, you know, it's, it
shows
unreal
how times have changed. But I mean, I was looking at Casemiro yesterday. He looks like he's aged 10 years over the last 6 months. Yeah, he looks like he's gone now.
It does. Yeah,
I think I thought it was a bit odd that Arsenal fans sort of cheered Harry Maguire onto the pitch. I thought that was a bit, that was odd, especially, you know, it's not
I
like
think it was a natural reaction, wasn't it, to the fact that we he is a bit shit.
fine, I get that, but, you know, I'm one of those sort of, like, I guess you can call it superstitious, like, you know, it'll go on a score of the winner or something like that. But, he's obviously gone through a terrible, 2-year period or whatever, but I think that would maybe, I don't know, not sure. Not that I, you know, mind from if you want to call it abuse, I don't know that much, but I just think that was slightly odd. But when I saw Johnny Evans come on, I almost had to double take.
And
Arsenal, we brought back Sol Campbell, you know, Omri, Lehmann, so maybe we're not ones to talk.
But
that was straight, to come on in a Premier League game. I mean, straight away, Jesus just turned him it was mad. That was strange. It was encouraging to see him come on. But also, it's not like he'd been playing a bit. He was coming on almost cold to come on into that. You know, that was.
We've got plenty of dead players, haven't they? I mean, Martial. I think he was on loan last year, wasn't he? They brought him back
a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Martial still has never delivered, does he? But the interesting about what about the Harry Maguire substitution, because what I thought was really funny, that he got massive cheers from the Arsenal fans when he came, ironic cheers. Josh, actually, next to me, was slightly appalled for another reason, but he just thought it was a bit much to be so kind of, you know, to be so harsh. I think he thought it was too harsh. I think it's in the natural, you know, ebb and flow of fandom, and, you know, and he's one of those players that people, I think it's the fact that he's still that first choice for England that people find quite bewildering.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that probably is it. He's almost become a laughingstock. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Through means of not his own, but yeah, I think I do. I have kind of agree with Josh. It's not like he is someone that's ever done Arsenal any harm as such, but he's still a Man U player. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. It surprised me more than anything, but. Back to your point before about their midfield being, you know, old and slow. And I think that was it. I think that's why they set up so deep, because they don't have the legs. They didn't have the legs.
Absolutely. And when you're looking at two, I think I sat there thinking at one point, I think maybe after their disallowed goal, before extra time, before added time, when it did feel like both teams almost were kind of happy with the draw, and they were both a little bit scared at that point conceding, and I thought maybe, but I sat there thinking, no, we're so much better than them. It would be outrageous if we settled for a draw, and that's why I think it made the subsequent events so spectacularly pleasing and exciting and thrilling.
You know,
and let's talk about.
Me?
Go on.
Sorry, 1 minute.
Yeah,
both teams looked really, really tired, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Yeah,
got to a stage where they were just knocking about at the back.
But I think it was really hot, wasn't it? To be fair, it was one of the hottest, the temperature wise.
And it was Josh a very emotional game.
It was emotional. Yeah, but I think Josh and I sat there thinking this is one of the hottest temperature-wise games we've ever been to at the Emirates. It just felt really, really like the sun was burning.
Humid heat.
So I think that added to the sense they were all fucking knackered. And it was, as you say, mentally exhausting as well. But what, let's talk about, I mean, you know, we've kind of left it to last, I think, perhaps fittingly. But I just think it's up there with the most satisfying and joyous experiences ever. I mean, the atmosphere was brilliant from the start. Like, Josh brought a friend who was not an Arsenal, I think he's a Coventry fan. And he said right at the beginning, he was like, oh, the atmosphere is brilliant. He wasn't really expecting it, you know, having been here probably before, a while ago, before, you know, the Arteta coming good year, if you like. But the atmosphere now was brilliant from the start, but it became incredible as time wore on, didn't it? And by the time, you know, it got to added time, it was just incredible. And there was something about both goals. Something about the celebration was incredible. Declan Rice's celebration, the other players going crazy around him, running into the fans, the close-up of him trying to protect his head when all these fans were like trying to grab onto his ears. The whole thing was fantastic. And then the Jesus goal was just a glorious piece of beauty as well.
We've got big history with Man United, you know.
Yeah.
And it's always great to beat Manchester United, no matter what. But it's even better when you beat them like that late.
Yeah.
Twice
with a double late goal.
Yeah. And like you, Boyd, I got to a stage and thought, especially when they scored that goal, I thought it was a goal. I did genuinely think it was onside, right?
Yeah.
Until we see the line.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's it. And I went so flat. I didn't speak until, you know, the VAR had come through and he said it's offside. I thought, okay. And that was like, it was like scoring ourselves at that stage, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but then from how down I went and into the euphoria of Declan Rice putting that one in. And then, I mean, Jesus, the way he sent the lad out for a bag of crisps, didn't he? The way he cut back on it. It was so funny. And
the
way he slotted that home was, and that's the point.
Yeah.
Because in the past, we've seen Jesus in front of goal, you know, latching at things, and there was no calmness. Because he's always quick, he's always busy about the pitch. And one thing I was saying, no, just calm down in front of goal. And I suppose, mate, I'm hoping now the penny's dropped.
I think you're right.
Once he gets in front of the goal, he's got to learn to just calm.
But I think that was pure instinct, you see, for me. I think when he he's one of those players who, when he doesn't have time to think about what he's doing, and he was just there the moment, and there was the sliding attempt to slide into him, and then he unleashed the shot brilliantly. But you're right, I think that would do his confidence a massive amount. I mean, he's not as confident, he's a confident player anyway, but I think it would just hopefully his goal scoring abilities.
I'm just praying now, we've got him back as the original Gabby, you know, and he's full of fitness now. Yeah. He's not, you know. And he's fine. I mean,
having said that, there's a battle there, isn't there, for the central centre forward role between him and Eddie. I mean, Eddie had a pretty good game again. You know, I would say. I mean, I'd rather. I think Jesus gets it for me. Rick, the whole ending, the whole last, you know, 10, 12 minutes of added time, the atmosphere, everything about it. How was it for you?
Yeah, it's right up there with one of my, you know, best games at the Emirates. I think my voice is gone from my thing. That was just from the Rice goal. Everything about it was just absolutely incredible. I the celebrations where I was sitting was just, they were really well unbelievable. There's just everything about it, like you said, Declan Rice. It really was unbelievable. I think the third goal, just to know that the game was done, was amazing.
The relief.
Absolutely
the
relief. Amazing. Yeah.
The relief was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because we knew there was no way back.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, a pent up, 60,000 people, 52,000 people pent up emotion.
Yeah. And Boyd, I agree with you, actually. I think Nketiah, I would start Jesus 10 out of 10 times, but Nketiah just seems to be playing better and better every game. Or he's getting more and more involved. Like, he's evolving into another Gabby. He's evolving more into like a Jesus type player rather than when he's just a penalty box player, which is really encouraging.
And he's like a battering ram now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He really gets involved. And I mean, he was absolutely shot, wasn't he? But when he came off, he was so tired.
Yeah. You know? He'd worked so hard. Yeah, it's true. Just a word about Declan Rice himself. I mean, I think it's a cliche to say it, but I think the 105 million has been paid off almost already, just because I think, you know, that goal is so important. That game, you know, I kept saying, I sat there muttering to Josh, you must have been so bored of me saying, but we had to win that game. I just think, just for the way our season, if we consider ourselves to be the main contenders to Man City, and I think we do, I think Arteta does, and I think, you know, now a lot of the players do, and I think particularly like Declan Rice said it in his post-match interview, I thought it was a really interesting thing to say, and quite unusual thing to say, that he felt that, you know, if we hadn't have won the game, we would have been too many points behind Man City too early on in the season. And the fact you're thinking like that, you know, that we are contenders for Man City is brilliant. I love that whole sense of ambition that he's got. He's a brilliant post-match interviewee, well, just an interview in general. He says stuff that you feel like is completely honest and down to earth, and, you know, I think he's a fantastic addition. So I genuinely think he's worth that.
And you know what? I think there's so much more for to come.
Oh, God, Yeah.
You know, you can just see it. You know, he's learning on the job. But you heard him say he's like learning a new position. The eight and the six and everything else. He said, but I think there's so much more. And I think, you know, he'll move on and he'll I think he's cheap for the money. You look at him.
I love it. Yeah.
I think he's cheap.
Yeah. And he was man of the match, Rick, wasn't he? So
definitely man of the match. But I think what it was, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes in, he put in a brilliant tackle on Bruno Fernandes. It was out of nowhere, but it was a tackle that maybe, you know, Xhaka wouldn't have got to. Not criticism of Xhaka necessarily, but it was the way he just had the speed to get there, and he was putting a brilliant tackle, came away with the ball, and I think that really set the tone. It was like, okay, that's sort of thing we want to see from someone like Declan Rice. That was amazing.
Yeah, totally. Well, we're running out of time, and so we've got a little international break, of course. I'm sure Saka will be picked in both of the games against Ukraine and Scotland because he never gets time off ever, which I kind of, you know, I love it in a way. But he will, you know, he obviously, maybe one day he'll get a rest. But
we need more of our players to do what Ben White did and just alienate themselves from the England squad.
Yeah, clearly there's no way back for Ben White.
If Harry Maguire is in the England squad and Ben White's not, then it's fair to say that Ben White's time with England has come to an end under Gareth Southgate.
If Jordan
Henderson can play as well, then
indeed. Yeah. So the next actual league game is on Sunday, the 17th of September, against Everton away at 4:30 p.m. Oh. Yeah, we don't have a great record, do we, at Everton? Even though they are absolutely shit. yeah. So, what do you think will happen this time, Jeff?
No, I just feel we're just way too strong for him now. If we go there with the right attitude, and you know, you got to match him. You know, you got the old school saying, you got to earn the right to play first. And we should honestly, we could go 3 or 4. I reckon, honestly, we should do. I'm going to go 3-0.
3-0, like it, Rick.
Yeah, anything but a win is just mad. They just about hung on, thanks to a great save by Pickford in the last minute against Sheffield United. So, yeah, but we always have a bad record there. I'll go 2-0.
I think I'll go 2-1. I think they might score first, but we'll triumph in the end. Well, Rick and Jeff, it's been fantastic as ever. We've coped without the presence of Josh, who is sidelined at the last minute. But thank you so much. And we'll be back after the international break, after the Everton game away. And let's hope we all win it and we triumph in the end. Cheers. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.